Recently had a program here at church called Conversations at the Death Cafe. Even though death is a universal part of life, it can be very hard to talk about. But it might get easier if we practice talking about it in a caring environment among friends. This is kind of the premise of the program. The capacity to talk about death and dying can help us support our loved ones as they endeavor to live their lives to the fullest, right up to the very end, and it can help us live our own lives to the fullest until the end, too. So we covered a lot of topics in this program, from paperwork to grief. One of the hottest topics was forgiveness. Our facilitator, my colleague, the palliative care chaplain, Reverend Gary Stritcharts, asked us to consider whether an end-of-life situation, whether it be our own or that of a relative or loved one, might call to mind relationships that need healing or reconciliation. It might not surprise you to hear that some of the people who came to our minds would not be easy to forgive or reconcile ourselves with, right? People are complicated. Families are complicated. We've been hurt. We hold grudges. I mean, sometimes the person who needs forgiveness is ourselves. We have apologies to make. We are seeking others' forgiveness, and we have regrets to let go of. We ourselves feel like we need to forgive ourselves. One of our participants expressed regret about something, and Reverend Gary asked, "Have you forgiven yourself?" It was a provocative question. How exactly do we do that? We wanted to know. I can think of a few strategies: self-compassion, spiritual practice, therapy. I wonder, have you ever forgiven yourself for something? Do you yearn to do so? What would it take? One of my takeaways from the conversations at the Death Cafe was that as far as end of life is concerned, our goal need not be to tie a pretty bow on every single relationship, to check every box. Check, I healed that wound. Check, I mended that bridge. Check, I received forgiveness from that person I wronged. It's not how it works. When it comes to the end of life, what matters more than tidying up all the messinesses of our relationships is our integrity. Are there things left unsaid which are keeping us from feeling connected to our own inherent worth and dignity? Does the anger we harbor prevent us from being our best selves? Honestly, these are questions we can consider at any time of life. This is not just a matter of end of life. If we feel that the answer to these questions are yes, then we can consider forgiveness. Our UU religious tradition supports forgiveness with a capital F. We are invited to believe that all are worthy of love and mercy with no conditions, no footnote that reads pending repentance. This does not mean that we can run rampant with no regard for one another, living things, and our planet. But that's another sermon. Today we're talking about how to forgive those who have hurt us. When we extend forgiveness, we are practicing our universalist faith. We partner with love, which is greater than us all. We honor our interconnectedness. We recognize that we are all more than our failings. Doesn't mean it's easy. About 10 years ago, I was working at a local environmental nonprofit. More than 10 years ago now. While I was there, I applied for and was offered my then dream job, which was to be farm manager at Revision Urban Farm. And I've told you many stories about Revision Urban Farm over the years. But this is about the job I had before that. Anyway, I approached the boss at my then job on a Friday to give a month's notice. I thought that was very generous of me. She did not take it well. She said, "Your last day is Monday." It seemed questionable that she could fire me for giving notice, but I didn't know what I could do about it. I was mortified. I slunk out of there and sulked, out of a paycheck and somewhat adrift while I waited for the new job to begin. Once I did start the new job, weird stuff started happening. For instance, our farm was no longer welcome to use a parcel of land that was under her organization's control. We encountered sudden and inexplicable obstacles when we were like this close to forming a partnership with a suburban farm that was affiliated with her organization. I told myself she was out to get me. I don't know. This narrative filled these events with all kinds of drama, and honestly, these were possibly mere coincidences, but like, she was a villain in my mind, and I was a victim of her vendetta against me. I felt attacked. I held on to my hurt for a long time. I was startled when, several years later, it seemed like I was still kind of mad about it all. I came across this old picture of an event, an open space event, and there she was in it. And just seeing her face kind of made me shudder. What good did it do me to harbor that resentment for so long? Was it that I got to feel righteous that I was mistreated all those years ago? I wonder. Do you have old hurts that you carry around? Maybe you bear something much heavier than that workplace nastiness I just described. Would you like to forgive someone who wronged you, but you find that it's not that simple? And what do we do when the harm seems unforgivable? Philosopher Joanna North writes, "When unjustly hurt by another, we forgive when we overcome the resentment toward the offender, not by denying our right to the resentment, but instead by trying to offer the wrongdoer compassion, benevolence, and love. As we give these," she writes, "we as forgivers realize that the offender does not necessarily have a right to these gifts, but we do it anyway." This definition acknowledges that forgiveness is difficult. When we forgive, we give up something we have every right to keep, our justifiable anger at having been wronged. And this definition recognizes that forgiveness asks us to go further than that, to extend compassion toward the one who hurt us. So, having said a word about what forgiveness is, I want to say what forgiveness is not. Forgiveness does not mean we have to pretend nothing happened, to shrug it off, or just move on. It is not the same as forgetting. We can forgive someone and still remember what they did to us. Forgiveness does not mean letting someone off the hook, letting people get away with doing harm. Forgiveness does not mean allowing ourselves to get hurt again. I learned these important premises about what forgiveness is not from reading about the work of Dr. Robert D. Enright. He's a psychologist and professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Dr. Enright has studied the effects of forgiveness for decades and has found, among other things, that forgiveness is good for our psychological well-being. He writes in his book, it's kind of like a how-to book called Forgiveness is a Choice. He writes, "People who talk with me about forgiveness often say that their resentment was a way of keeping the one who hurt them in a kind of emotional prison. As long as they held on to the anger and bitterness, the other stayed in the jail cell. Over time, they began to realize that it was they themselves who were imprisoned by the hatred and not the other person. Our hatred affects us emotionally more than it affects the one who hurt us." Based on their research, he and his team developed a forgiveness process and found it to be effective among people who had experienced serious harm, including trauma. The process has four phases. So phase one is to uncover our anger, to examine and comprehend the extent of what we are feeling. The stage may be painful because, as he explains, forgiveness is not about pretending that nothing happened or hiding from the pain. You have suffered, and you need to be honest with yourself about that suffering. That's phase one, uncover our anger. Phase two is deciding to forgive. This deceptively simple step gets a whole phase of its own because Dr. Enright and his people have determined that forgiveness is a choice, something we undertake with real intention. So phase two is deciding to forgive. The third phase is to work at it. It's not just a matter of saying, I forgive you, or I forgive so-and-so in our heads. Dr. Enright describes a variety of practices that might help make it real. We can separate the offense from the offender. That's one strategy. We can consider the offender's point of view or life experience. We can try on a global or cosmic perspective. These are some examples of ways that people can really work at forgiveness. Once it's possible to offer the person who harmed us compassion, we may find that this phase is complete. So that's phase three. The fourth phase he calls discovery and release from emotional prison. When we are in the fourth phase, we may feel relieved of resentment, no longer controlled by the one who has hurt us. I thought it might be interesting to try out all these steps on that scenario I described with my old boss by way of example. So I can start by recognizing that it was stressful and insulting when my old boss fired me for giving a month's notice, right? So that's phase one is called uncover our anger. So making some space for the hurt I felt, for how mad I felt. So then the second phase, I can try that out and decide it's time to forgive her. I'm ready to leave that past behind me. I don't need to forget about it, but I don't need it to like live inside of me anymore. So in the third phase, I can try to consider the bigger picture of her life experience. So she was president of an organization. She was roughly in her 60s about 10 or 15 years ago. So I imagine she came of age during a time when it was perhaps unusual for women to be in leadership. Maybe she had to fight her way into positions of power and respect in her field. Maybe she never quite shook that tendency to fight. I have no idea. I'm making this up. But even just considering her point of view kind of like helps me feel open to extending compassion towards her. So finally, I might be ready to be released from this bitterness. I can be in this fourth phase. I can stumble upon an old photo of her and just feel calm and maybe even wish her well. So Dr. Enright would not recommend racing through all four steps like I just did, but I thought it might be helpful for it to be a little more concrete than just a list. So quite the opposite. This book, Forgiveness is a Choice, includes journaling exercises and prompts for reflection. He and his team developed this process with people who had gone through really hard stuff, abuse, violence, loss, neglect. So it can and should take time, months or even years. Maybe a four-phase process feels like a lot right now. Maybe you'd like to start with just one thing. Theologian Wendy Farley, the author of the reading I shared with you this morning, suggests we try patience. Patience, according to Dr. Farley, calms the outrage of our egocentrism enough to see what else is happening besides our injury. She points to forgiveness traditions found in both Christianity and Buddhism, writing, "Christ gives us the impossible advice that we love our enemy. Buddhists characterize the enemy as our most helpful teacher." Patience is the key to heeding these difficult teachings. As Dr. Farley explains, in the writings of Christian and Buddhist monastics, the main emphasis of patience is to train in the discipline of considering the perspective of others, even when they are unreasonable or harmful. But again, we need not dive right into extending patience towards helpful, hurtful people. Dr. Farley acknowledges that it is very hard and can feel like an affront to our own boundaries to be patient with people who have harmed us. She suggests we practice cultivating our discipline of patience on non-human phenomena, such as computers, traffic, lost shoes, long lines. These are all wonderful opportunities to practice being patient when the stakes are a little lower. Dr. Farley cautions that patience does not excuse harm or require us to submit to our suffering. Patience, she explains, is not passive endurance, but the energy to move through difficulty without letting it claim our whole selves. She writes, patience opens up a part of our soul not governed by pain and pleasure. Here, she writes, from her theistic perspective, God remains with us no matter what. Here, our capacity for compassion survives every frustration and assault. In the midst of defeat and sorrow, she tells us, a deeper joy sustains us here. Back to the research of the psychologist Robert Enright, the title of his book, Forgiveness is a Choice, underscores the fact that we have agency when it comes to forgiveness. We can free ourselves from the prison that our old anger and hurt trap us in. He writes, there's not some automatic click that sets you free. The knowledge that you have the option to decide to turn the key can set you free. You must courageously choose to walk out of that cell. He explains that some have lived with the label of victim for so long that it's become part of them. They'd rather live in the cell because at least they know what to expect there. Forgiveness, on the other hand, according to Dr. Enright, beckons us outside and into the future. Archbishop Desmond Tutu said, without forgiveness, there is no future. And so, may our capacity to forgive help usher in a better future. May we be reborn and freed from cycles of hurt and alienation, reborn into community and compassion. May it be so.